Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Architect, designer, and environmental artist Maya Lin has worked hard to move beyond the category of monument maker. Her own success has made that a challenge. Her Vietnam Veterans Memorial, with its polished black granite walls in Washington, has become a transcendent spot of American contemplation. Memorials to civil rights heroes and women followed. A decade ago, Maya Lin announced that she was out of the memorial business. But she's done one more, her last, she says, to vanishing species. And this one, you can hear this hour on Point, the art and call to action of Maya Lin. You can join the conversation. Have you stood before her Vietnam memorial, thought of it as the dead come home from Afghanistan? Are you ready to perceive the natural world through the eyes and ears of Maya Lin? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Maya Lin joins us now from New York, creator of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C., the Civil Rights Memorial in Montgomery, Alabama, the Women's Table at Yale, and a host of projects since, sculpting and interacting with the natural world. The New York Times calls her a creator of eloquent public spaces of private reconciliation and renewal. You can see a gallery of her work at our website, onpointradio.org. Her latest and last memorial to vanished and vanishing biodiversity is called What is Missing? Maya Lin, welcome to On Point. It's great to have you.
Thank you, Tom.
Thank you very much for being here. Thanks for all of your work, those famous memorials, and really tremendous work since. I've enjoyed over the years following the arc of your career. It's just tremendous. What has brought you to biodiversity as your last memorial subject, Maya Lin?
I've been focusing, I think, ever since I was a kid. I grew up, and maybe people of a certain era in the 60s grew up, where the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act were all becoming part of this country's legal ways of protecting the environment. And I think it had a very lasting impression on me as a child. I think the one issue through the 60s as I was growing up that I became very much enamored of was things dealing with the environment. I remember being out in the middle of the shopping market petitioning to stop the whale hunting. Mm. I did another petition for stopping, you know, steel trapping of animals. So I don't think my parents ever figured it out, but I was always extremely concerned with the environment and actually went to college to study animal behavior and sort of got sidetracked in art and have always used science and looking at geology, topography in my artwork. And I think for about 10, 15 years, I've known that I would like to close the memorial series. I tend to work in series as an artist. I wanted to close it with one that focused on vanishing species, endangered habitats.
Describe the new memorial for us. And we know it's not just the physical sort of sculpted part. There's video and sound, handheld electronics, printed materials, interactive website, which is quite something already and will be up in Times Square next Earth Day, I think, on the big MTV screen there. But at the California, Academy of Sciences?
California Academy of Sciences debuts it through a commission through the San Francisco Arts Commission, a permanent large sculpture. It's takes an idea of a memorial and asks, can we make it? Can we make it information? Can we let that memorial go to many different physical and what you would say non-physical iterations? So it's media, it's sound and film based, and it is available. It's posted on whatismissing.net. It can be shared with many of the groups, but it also exists in specific science museums, of which the California Academy of Sciences is the first debut of a very permanent, what I call a listening cone. It's large enough that you can walk into it and sit down. It is almost like the RCA Victor.
Yeah.
That is it, the megaphone, the speaker?
The big cone that comes up off the record player in the old picture with the dog, or what we see in old depictions of a deaf person in the 19th century with a cone from their ear. It is literally a kind of what bronze exterior redwood interior cone, yeah. 9 feet tall or so at its mouth that you can step into and listen.
Yeah, and it's redwood is reclaimed wood. It's wood on the inside. It's a bronze on the outside. And you literally, I think, two or three kids can sit inside, or two grown people can. And I think even though we're starting with what is missing, what we're losing, making you wake up a little bit to what a lot of scientists have termed the sixth mass extinction on the state of the Earth, the only one that's being driven not by, say, an asteroid or a meteor hitting the Earth, it's being driven by one species, mankind, and that literally waking people up. And then we'll begin to phase what is missing, whether it's at these permanent installations. Mm-hmm. There's also a traveling exhibit we opened at the same time we opened the permanent listening cone in San Francisco. We debuted it as a traveling exhibit in Beijing. Mm-hmm. And we also have a one projector traveling exhibit up at Storm King Art Center right now. And it will also be, as you mentioned, come Earth Day in New York, in Times Square. The Creative Time group has lent us the MTV billboard, and there'll be a 5-minute little film called, again, What is Missing, that will again talk about species loss, habitat loss, and a little bit about what you can do about it.
But the installation, the physical installation, along with media already at the San Francisco Academy of Sciences, is almost as though you, Maya Lin, are putting a kind of listening cone or telescope up to our eye, our ear, and bringing us images and sound of vanished or vanishing species. I want to begin to sort of help our listeners feel as though they're standing at the mouth of this cone, hear from What is Missing. A little bit of this one's an endangered species, one of those, the sound of which comes from the cone, the mating ritual called booming of the prairie chicken. Sound of the prairie chicken from Maya Lin's What is Missing? Listening Cone, now in San Francisco. Maya Lin, what are you hoping people experience as they stand at the mouth of this sort of cornucopia listening to what's gone or going?
I mean, I think it's one of the most important things is there are actually less sounds about that those species that have gone extinct. There are more that are either on the brink or are reduced in numbers. They might not actually be on the endangered species list, but they've suffered a drastic decline. I think at first a sense of surprise, a sense of wonder. At times we use recording accounts from history. Christopher Columbus, when he sailed into the Caribbean, he thought he had run aground. He hadn't. He had run into a sea of green turtles. So literally I don't think, and I think scientists call it shifting baselines, I don't think people really understand how rich this land used to be, and that if we try to kind of prevent it, there's actually a lot we can do. So it's not just about, oh, that species has gone extinct, let's mourn it. It's really a wake-up call, and then things that can be done. For instance, with right now, you know, I've actually stopped eating sushi-grade tuna. It's, as World Wildlife Fund says, it will be commercially extinct within 3 years if we do not stop fishing it out of existence. So there are a lot of things that we could do. We could actually, all of us, make a little difference. And there's a sense of hope in that. There'll be things that will go in that will tell you things that you can do, what we eat, what we drink, what we buy, what we wear, what we throw away, that is having a severe impact on species and habitat loss. And so much of this is linking species loss to habitat loss. The prairie chickens, again, one of the things that we all have heard more about, tropical deforestation losses, but the grasslands that used to cover this country are in such a drastic decline that we literally have taken away the homes of these species. And if we're not careful, if we don't think about it, they'll be gone.
Or at sea here from the same exhibit, the humpback whale. It seems, Maya Lin, as if you're trying to give us a kind of peephole grasp handle on the scale and scope of what has been and what is now at stake here.
Well, I think specifically with that sound recording, that's actually a historic recording from the 60s by Roger Payne. And again, I didn't realize it. I met Roger. He's wonderful. When he recorded that, nobody knew that Wales sang. And that recording actually was instrumental in getting the boycott of whale hunting. And in a way, Roger really saved the whales the first time. Now, he would say that right now the toxicity in the oceans is so high that these whales are just being poisoned, and that, again, we don't tend to focus on it because we can't really see it. So sometimes if we bring you to an art a different way of looking or listening to something. So if you can use sounds, and a lot of these sounds are donated by individual groups, but also mm-hmm. Cornell Ornithology Labs, and it's just there. We're almost not used to it. It's a sense that takes second fiddle to visuals at time. I think anyone in the radio world will appreciate and understand that. But if you can stop people from looking for a second and they have to listen first, it's going to bring in a very different, maybe a more immediate, maybe personal connection to what you're paying attention to.
Here's the lemur from the endangered species list. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour with architect, designer, environmental artist Maya Lin, designer of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, about her latest and, she says, last memorial to vanishing species. It's called What is Missing. There's a physical part, a listening cone in San Francisco, and will be elsewhere. There is a video and sound and electronics that will be, ultimately, she hopes, all over the world, already going there. You can join the conversation this hour. What do you think? Will our grandchildren understand the abundance our grandparents knew on this earth? Can a memorial remind them, inspire them to restore maybe a Maya Lin memorial? We're at 800-423-8255, 800-423-TALK. And we've got a lot of callers, Maya Lin. If I can go to, let's go to Peggy in Burlington, Vermont. Peggy, you're on the air. Okay.
Yes, hi, Tom. Hi. I was flabbergasted when I heard Maya Lin was on your show this morning, because I've seen the Vietnam Memorial, and it's breathtaking, absolutely breathtaking. But the comment that I wanted to make was I grew up in North Dakota, and I've seen the farming practices change out there. And consequently, with this intense farming, the western meadowlark has almost disappeared from where I used to live. They used to be as thick as blackbirds, and now you have to hunt to find them. Mm. And a lot of the small birds, the songbirds and so forth, they can't find food anymore. It's their habitat has been totally destroyed by this farming right up to the roadsides. The toxins that are used to grow wheat, whether it's fertilizers, insecticides, or whatever, have just devastated the land. Now there's a new toxin out that makes the wheat ripen evenly so they can straight combine it rather mm-hmm. than crocuses. Crocuses was the wildflower out there. You could find them anywhere that there wasn't disturbed soil. They're almost impossible to find because everything is now disturbed.
So do you think it all deserves a Maya Lin memorial, and can it prompt something worthwhile, Peggy?
I'm so pleased to hear that somebody of her stature is looking at this issue. I can't find words.
There's full appreciation, Maya.
Thank you, Peggy. One of the things, because we will be unfurling What is Missing, it's a bit of a I want to call it an artwork that will take shape over the next 3 years. We start with, there are about 50 to 100 scenes of videos, but what you mentioned, one of my topics is not just specific species, but issues that people don't realize a bit about that are disappearing. So one of those is the sounds of once common songbirds in our backyards, the meadowlark, the boreal chickadee, the hummingbird. Many of these common songbirds are in a 70 to 40% decline due to, as Peggy mentioned, pesticides, habitat loss, edge condition, where we've basically fragmented the forest, leaving some birds much more susceptible to attack from the parasite birds. And I think people don't realize that literally what's missing, the sounds which we once heard as children of our songbirds, has drastically changed. Mm. And again, it's happened little by little by little. So we almost don't realize that things are disappearing. So that is something that struck me. I was just so saddened by that. So one thing we're going to do is we're going to reveal issues that are missing, from the oxygen in the ocean to the longevity of animals and trees. We just don't let things grow old. I was just in Mexico, and there was a 2,000-year-old tree, the last one of its kind, a cedar, in a town. Again, we've just taken things out, and these long-lived species are very susceptible to extinction often at times. So it'll be revealing things you might not be thinking about. What is missing? Rivers that no longer flow freely to the sea. But another thing, and this goes specifically back to what Peggy just said, in a year and a half, we'll be working with Google to create online what I call a map of memory, and we're going to invite people to add a memory of a place that they remember. So the memorial will actually grow as a collective memory of the planet, only if we can get people like Peggy to add their thoughts, their images, their memories of a place. So again, it's a very experimental idea of a memorial. Can we make a memorial jump form? Can we allow it to go to multiple forms simultaneously? And that we will be looking at the past. We'll also be connecting to many environmental groups, showing you what the experts are doing. So it's about the present. And then I'm working with Eric Sanderson and WCS. By 2012, we'll be presenting what I call a green print for the future, which almost takes that, if you can remember, that NASA view of the Earth world at night. Can we imagine rearranging the lights? Can we learn to share the planet? So Eric will be working with us on 2 to 3 plausible ways where we can balance our needs with the needs of the planet. And I'm very focused. I'm very committed to kind of making this, even though I call it the last memorial. It'll probably take me my lifetime and then hopefully beyond, where everyone begins to become a part of it.
Maya Lin, looking to the future there with a kind of call for action, an unending memorial, but looking to the past as well to remember what has been. You've cited environmental accounts from back in 1650 from North America, wild turkeys weighing 40 pounds, lobsters 6 feet long, oysters 12 inches across. Here's from the listening cone and the what is missing sculpture and sound cone, the sound of the endangered loon. Let's get a call right here from Spokane, Washington, and Trish. Trish, you're on the air with Maya Lin.
Well, Maya Lin, I've decided you're my new hero. and this is so ironic, listening to that loon. My husband and I were in Montana last summer and had the rare opportunity. We couldn't believe we heard the sound, and it was of a loon. My comment that I wanted to make is I work in the technology and online industry, and two things. I can't think of a better way to reach children who are, well, most of us who are being pulled away with technology from interacting with one another and being in touch with the earth. Doing what you're doing is such an incredible way, in my mind, to reach people through technology. So just what an incredible way to do that, and such an emotion that it pulls when you hear the sounds of those animals. It just really triggers something that a lot of other mediums can't do, that sound can do. So I just
really admire so much what you're doing.
Trish, may I ask you, have you seen the Vietnam Memorial? Can you draw a line in your own mind from that very simple, you know, polished black, those black planes, to this more complex, multidimensional Maya Lin offering?
Boy, I can. It's been a couple years since I've been there. But again, it does stand, the Vietnam Memorial really stands out in my mind. I was born in 65, so wouldn't have been aware of all the details. And again, that drew a lot of emotion out of me, although they seem to be very different in the way that they're being presented. I guess the common line would be emotion, really reaching out to people and getting their attention in a society where we are so pulled away by technology.
Trish, thanks very much for calling. Here's the bald eagle from the listening cone of What is Missing. Maya Lin, I wish you'd try and draw that line perhaps yourself. You were only 21 when you drew the Vietnam Veterans Memorial. Now here you're embracing almost the whole planet, and not just now, but its past and looking into its future. Vietnam Memorial, so famously, it's complex in its sighting and in its, our interaction, but so simple at the same time. Speak of yourself as an artist, a designer. You then designing that, you now designing this.
I think there's a couple things, and I think the last caller tapped onto it. There's an intimacy with all my works. I think no matter what, it focuses you on a very specific one-on-one relationship. One could say that you see yourself reflected in the names for the Vietnam Memorial. You have to touch the names and react to the water for the civil rights. The text, and I'll go back to a very literary reference, The text for my pieces tends to be tiny, half an inch high, less than half an inch for the text size for the Vietnam Memorial. Unheard of in its time. In fact, I had huge arguments with certain text designers, you can't do that. But you can, but you end up putting a book out of doors versus putting a billboard out there. Mm-hmm. And the minute you put a book outside, no matter how many people are there, you still have to react to it one-on-one.
Mm-hmm. When come you close, read me.
Right. When you listen to something once more, you're reacting to something one-on-one. It's extremely personal and very private, even though these works, and I would say whether it's the architecture, my sculptures, this reliance on that one-on-one, almost immediate reaction, almost a psychological space that I'm after in these works ties them together. Another thing is I present facts. I've always presented facts. One could argue that there is no true objective history. But again, I choose to let the science or the history or the fact be fairly bare bones. And then viewers almost don't feel like you're being preached to or told what to think. You actually have to come away with your own conclusions. I'll just read what is said when you listen to the common loon. This is all that's said. I'm quoting from many, many different sources. It's not so much my voice, but I'm pulling from World Wildlife Fund, IUCN, all these different groups. This one's from National Geographic. What is missing? The common loon. 30 years ago, residents of northeastern North America noticed a decline in population of this common bird. When researchers began studying the birds, they noticed high levels of mercury in their blood and feathers. The lakes where they made their nests had been poisoned by pollution from coal-burning power plants. And that's it. Mm-hmm. And then you deliberately hear the sound of the loon before you know what it is. Then a brief text comes up, and then it fades out as the loon actually dives below the water. When it's the temporary traveling exhibit, you actually hold an optic piece of plexiglass. The image of the loon is held in your hand, and it's actual scale to you. So what I'm trying to do there is almost create a very strong psychological connection. So you're actually holding the animal in your hand, or you're holding the place. A key thing is we're taking you to places like Madagascar, the Congo, the Everglades, emphasizing that it's really habitat loss, which has become a huge driver in species extinction right now. Making that connection is a huge point.
May I ask, over the years, perhaps once, perhaps many times, you must have stood at the Vietnam Veterans Memorial and watched people's profound reactions to it. I'm drawn back there every time I'm in Washington, and I'm always blown away by how many people are having a very deep and often deeply emotional experience at that wall. I want to ask you first how that feels for you as a designer to see that unfolding. And then if you'd compare it to what you've seen so far, a reaction to your listening cone, that's war, that's loss. So is this one in a way, but it's different. What's that experience like observing, and what about in this memorial, Mylin?
The relationship to watching people experience the Vietnam Memorial is slightly complex because especially when it first came out, you knew that the people there actually lost someone. And it was very much a private mourning process for many. Mm-hmm. Now, 20-some years later, it's a little bit more distant, but you still have a fairly strong connection to the immediacy of loss, at which point part of me felt a little guilty, like, am I a voyeur? Should I not be here? Should I respect? Especially because I knew that I had sort of caught, you know, created this one.
You were calling up this emotion with your design.
Right. And in fact, I'll never forget the very first night I went there for the first time. This one veteran was just screaming at me. I was pinned down at the apex and the Park Service guards had to come out. Part of me just realized the piece was working. It was pulling out a lot of emotions, that he was going to have to go through a fairly cathartic sense of acknowledging a loss to overcome it. I think so there's a extra layer of, if you knew someone who died, that mourning process is a very, very tough one. It's a very charged one. And at times I think I've been so heartened when I get letters back from veterans that just say, thank you. I couldn't remember this time. I couldn't focus on it. You really have helped. That is extremely, I don't know how to describe how that makes you feel to know you've helped someone. For what I've experienced so far with how people are reacting to what is missing, and I think I've spent a little less time with San Francisco. I know people have sat inside it. People have stood outside. They've walked around. The best way for me, when I was in Beijing, because I was there for about 4 or 5 days, had a little bit more time. Normally, in what you would call a video art installation, you might get someone to watch for about a minute. In fact, when people told me, well, in a museum environment, at most they're going to, you have to make your videos like really short. You've got to get through this because they don't have the staying power. Apparently in China, people were standing and holding that screen for 5 or 10 minutes,
wow,
which is unheard of. So my attitude is I tend to make these very intuitively, knowing that it's a very one-on-one relationship. I almost make them so children can engage with it at a very simple level, that we're not here to over-intellectualize it. And yet at the same time, I think they do talk to you on a very psychological level. And I kind of want to go back and observe a little bit what's happening at Cal Academy. I think they've had people that want to just sit in there too long, which is a little bit of a problem because then others can't see it. So I'll have to go back and check it out. That one was placed at they have two outdoor terraces, one on the east, one on the west. So it's a little quiet. It's a little out of the way. You actually have to go find it. I don't tend to like to put my pieces like right at the entrance. And again, it's this quiet reserve where you actually have to seek it out a little bit.
And when you do find the listening cone from the What Is Missing Memorial, you might hear this, the sound of the koala from the Australian Koala Foundation.
Thank you.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Sound there from the latest, and she says, Last Memorial by artist, designer, environmental activist Maya Lin. She joins us today from New York. Her new exhibit is What is Missing? That from a listening cone in San Francisco. There's the gibbon. The whole thing allows people to look and listen into the biodiversity of the earth vanished and vanishing, maybe to build some resolve to bring it back. Holly's calling from Verona, Virginia. Holly, you're on the air with Maya Lin.
Hi, and I'm grateful, too. I was a Red Cross worker in Vietnam in 1966 and 7, and I've been to the wall many, many times. I have friends on the wall. But I think you mentioned, Maya Lin, that the tactile
experience
is so important, touching those names. It's really very healing, I guess you could say, because so many men, mostly, that come to the wall are they're very interested and it's necessary for them as part of their own healing. And I am grateful to you, but my question is, how did you design the names? Because they're listed as if they are on panels facing east and west, but they're as if they were listed in a book, and they're chronologically by day. And how did you think of that? It's great.
Because actually, it's a chronological listing. It begins and ends as a circle, with the beginning of the war and the end of the war coming together at the apex where the two walls meet, symbolically broken, of course, by the earth. It's the idea was, even though this lists those that were killed, I wanted to bring in as much the returning veteran. So you will find your time upon the wall when you go and find your where you know people who died. So psychologically, you're coming back, and you actually then have to turn around and, you know, walk out into the light, walk back up the hill. Again, I had a huge – there were debates because why do you want to list them chronologically? No one ever lists them chronologically. And then I just showed the group how many Smiths there were. And, again, it's just giving a sense of meaning to a time. Many of my works – in fact, I'm very, very drawn to using time in – almost all of the memorials, whether it's civil rights, the women's table, it's a way of, maybe it's this involvement, if we remember accurately history, that's the only way we're going to be able to overcome a painful situation. We have to kind of face it and then acknowledge it and then move on, always mourning, always caring, but at the same time, in a way, we tend to, if something's unpleasant, if something's painful at times, we can kind of color it or change it or modify it if we stop thinking about it. And I think, again, if we can face history, I think there's actually a group that's called Facing History, mm-hmm. which teaches you about, makes history very compelling. And I feel like that is a part of what that piece does in particular. I think, again, I'm very drawn to using the past in What is Missing. But again, I have found some incredible quotes through the era. The very first accounting of deforestation is Plato in 350 BC. And we all might think the Mediterranean looks dry and arid and treeless. Mm. And again, it was deforested, and Plato talks about it. You know, he talks about the soil having fallen away, so only the mere skeleton of the land is left. But in the primitive state of the country, its mountains were high hills covered with soil. The plains were full of rich earth, and there was abundance of wood in the mountains. So again, giving you a sense of surprise, like, I didn't realize this. Or, you know, Julius Caesar even talks about the fearful beast the size of an elephant. It's a wild ox called an auroch, and it's the ancestor of all domestic cattle, and it went extinct in the 1600s. So again, allowing history to begin to reveal what this planet used to hold. Marco Polo, going through Southeast Asia, remarks about the plenty, the abundance of unicorns, not as pretty as he thought they were. In fact, he remarks how ugly they are. Of course, he's talking about rhinos, of which they used to range all over Southeast Asia. And now there's just a few holdouts in Sumatra and Borneo.
Yeah, yeah.
So, again, waking people up with using history to begin to pull us in. And then, again, very important that this one also gives us hope. This is what you can do. We'll be building, you know, a key component. We'll be showing you what the experts are doing all over the world in terms of conservation and habitat. And then, again, imagining a future where we can balance our needs and the needs of the planet.
Speaking of time and hope, there's a wonderful video clip that's part of the exhibit where you're running backwards. The felling of a great tree looks like a redwood,
right,
but you run it in reverse, and there's something quite magical. The first thing that happens is you see all this greenery in the air. You're not sure where it's coming, and then the tree begins to stand back up, and the saw is withdrawn. Time definitely at work, but in reverse, and a kind of hope that comes with it.
Right. I think one of the things is, you know, I've come across, and I know it's really, as we move towards talking about carbon emissions, 20% of all carbon emissions is caused by deforestation. So for me, and that's equivalent to all the cars, trucks, planes, ships combined. So don't burn it down in the first place. So I call it a win-win. We can save two birds with one tree. We can't unchop the tree, but we cannot chop it down in the first place. And again, we can be very careful. We can do strategic reforestation. But again, if it's not done right, it can be have disastrous effects. So I'm really pushing as much for a focus so we can combine reducing global warming emissions with species and habitat protections. It's a win-win situation for both, and we really need to move quickly because the forests, the grasslands of the world are disappearing so rapidly. The last sound you played, the Malaysian gibbon, mm-hmm. whether it's for lumber export or slash and burn agriculture or palm oil, Southeast Asian forests are disappearing almost more rapidly than the rainforest. And again, everything we do as consumers, the wood we buy, the paper we buy nothing but recycled paper, and the wood, again, forest stewardship certified wood, you have to buy sustainable wood or recycled wood. We all can make a difference.
Speaking of Southeast Asia and the forest, here's the endangered orangutan from Maya Lin's new memorial. Sounds like a bird, but I guess it's Big Nancy in Boxborough, Massachusetts. You're on the air with Maya Lin.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Maya Lin. I wanted to thank you for all you've done and to let you know that when we were about to get our referral for our twin daughters from China 10 years ago, we had no question at all. We had had the name Maya Lin. For one, we didn't realize we were getting twins, but so we have a Maya Lin. We spell it all with one word.
Wow.
And one of her greatest wishes in life is to meet her namesake. And until that time, we'll take her to your different memorials. But she's so proud. She's read the book Boundaries. And she thinks the world of you, and so do we. So thank
How
you.
Old are your daughters?
They'll be 10 in January.
Well, wish them happy birthday for me, and if you leave your address with the host, we'll be able to write something to them.
We will definitely.
That would be wonderful.
We'll get it. Hang on, Nancy, and we'll get it off air. That's an amazing story. There's one for you to think about,
yeah,
Maya. Here's a question for you online from Jeannie. She says, "Thanks for all your terrific work." And then she asks, "What does it mean to stand in the shadow of the wall, the Vietnam Memorial, and regard Iraq and Afghanistan?" She asks you.
Well, I think to me, and again, how can I put it? Lessons should be learned from history. I am so heartened to see, with respect to the families, with the returning wounded and those that have been killed in Iraq and Afghanistan. Remember when a woman was fired because she had a picture of a coffin coming back.
Mm-hmm.
I felt for many, many years that one of the sad lessons learned was that if we controlled the images of the dead coming back, well, then America would forget. I think it's extremely important that we really remember the amount of people that are being injured and killed right now, and that in a way, again, it's all about this honesty and focusing and acknowledging, so that, I mean, it for me, and I was sort of cynical in the last, 8 years, why was there like a lockdown on the coffins and
Dover Air Force Base, where President Obama was recently. Mm-hmm.
Which was wonderful because, again, we can't forget. And I think, I think that could have been a tactic and a strategy of the previous administration to make us not remember. But again, I mean, it's amazing what the veterans have gone through in both Iraq and Afghanistan, what they're going through. Some are going back time and time and time again. They're suffering from horrific injuries. And again, I know different reporters have covered it, and I think it's very, very important. I think a lot of the veterans from the Vietnam War suffered a lot when they came back. Some of them had been drafted, others chose to go, and people spit upon them. And I think we have to really remember and acknowledge that these soldiers are giving and risking their lives, and we can never forget that.
You were so young when you designed the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, 21, that you've lived through all the time since then, kind of along with us who are here now. You were there for 9/11. You helped jury the decision on a memorial for the 9/11 Lower Manhattan site. You're watching Afghanistan now. You watched Iraq. I mean, you're active and political on the environment. Are you active and political on these wars? Do you ever feel it as a kind of, for all the impact of the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, do you ever feel it as a kind of failure that these wars have come anyway?
I think you can do what you can do as far as, obviously,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's war is that last choice. If we get to a time when we can list all sides on a memorial, then hopefully we won't need a memorial because we won't see ourselves as us or them. I think we as a species haven't been able to figure out how to resolve our differences without violence. And, you can only hope. I think for me, I've had to move on. I focused on history, covering whether it's a civil rights, women's rights. I'm doing a project through the state of Washington on Native American history and in terms of, Lewis and Clark and what's changed so much. I think, focused in my work in looking at different parts of history and how it's affected us. And I think for me, I've in a way had to kind of put the memorials of war at rest with the Vietnam. I obviously, when I was asked to participate with the World Trade Center Memorial, mm-hmm. I really wanted to donate my time and give back. As a rule, I've known how big a project that first one was, and I've needed to really define my work as an artist and my work as an architect as well. I think you come out of the gate with something that big and that public. You as an artist don't compete with yourself. You kind of are as interested in the latest works. And for me, my heart is with, if I can affect change with the environment, I think we are at a point where, if I could just read you a statistic from IUCN, yeah. 1 in 8 birds, 1 in 4 mammals, 1 in 3 amphibians, 1 in 4 conifers so far assessed are threatened with extinction, with human alteration of their habitat the single biggest cause. And so I'm really trying to see if I could do something with what is missing that can wake people up, and maybe we can step back from this. I think this planet is remarkable in terms of its biodiversity. If you give nature a chance, it can come back. Like right now, many of our fishing stocks are in a 90% decline, but if you take a marine no-take zone, within 3 years, if you let an area not be fished, the sea life comes back. So if we give it a chance, the world can heal. The world can come back. It's full of life. You drive in and out of Manhattan, you see a tree trying to, like, grow and root in the rock wall of the city. And it's not just separating nature from man. If you look at a place like Manhattan, Central Park is one of our great flyway stopovers of bird migration. So how can we invite wilderness and wildlife into our own backyard? And again, as I think Peggy said at the start, be careful what you put on your lawn. Don't use pesticides. Don't use fertilizers. Grow native plants that will invite wilderness back in. I mean, I think that's my true focus, and I really will spend the rest of my life really focused on it, because it's, I think we all, whether we give back in this or that realm, if we choose something where we can make a difference. And for me, I'm very committed to the environment.
Speaking of inviting back in, I want to invite those prairie chickens back in. I can't get enough of those. You heard them at the top of the show. And they are just one of the many species in Maya Lin's What is Missing exhibit. I can't tell you how many calls we have not been able to get on here from Vietnam veterans thanking you, from design students wanting to ask how you define the difference between a memorial and the rest of your work. I hope you'll come back another day. There's just more than we can, there's more than we can take on today. But I think I speak for an awful lot of people in thanking you for the many facets of your life's work so far, Maya Lin, and for this new effort as well, What is Missing. I want to recommend to all of our listeners, you can see a gallery of Maya Lin's work at our website, onpointradio.org. Also check out hers, mayalin.com, one of the most remarkable, wonderful websites I've ever seen. We're grateful for her time today. Maya Lin, thank you for everything.
Thank you, Tom.
For being here.
Thank you.
You really have made a difference, and we're grateful for it. Maya Lin, What is Missing? Look for it. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.